It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Jason Snell, Andy Yanocco, Alex Lindsay, and I, we're all here. Of course, we'll be talking about Apple's event a week from Monday. What will the VR headset bring, and will it be evolutionary or revolutionary? Jason's embargo is lifted. He can talk about his one-week review of Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro for the iPad. And then Andy brings back a classic Macintosh game. All that and more coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 871, recorded Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023. Andy's Wild Thumb. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Melissa. More than 10,000 clients worldwide rely on Melissa for full spectrum data quality and ID verification software. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. And by AG1 from Athletic Greens. If you're looking for a simpler, cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 is giving away a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packets with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Jason Snell in the house, sixcolors.com, and he is now unembargoed.
I am. I'm unencumbered by Apple embargoes. I can tell all about headset. Nope. Final Cut and Logic for the iPad.
Very careful. Also with us, we'll tell you about what that's all about in a second. Also with us, Andy Yanocco, WGBH in Boston. Almost said the other thing. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. You always tell when Jason is up from under embargo, his hair is like lighter, more bounce, more body.
That's right. I thought it was the head and shoulders. What did I know? And Mr. Alex Lindsay from officehours.global. Hello.
Hello,
Alex. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference kicking off less than a week away. No, more than a week away. A week from Monday.
Scared me.
I scared you. A week from, it's official though. They've put out a press release. So a week from Monday, and we'll be here recording our coverage. We did that this morning at 9 a.m. I got up to watch Satya Nadella say Microsoft's all about AI. Kind of knew that.
Well, it was all about the cloud.
I'm going to do it. It's the cloud and AI. It's together at last.
There we go.
Two great.
It's about the cloud as a service.
In
I
one.
Think.
Yeah. And tomorrow we'll cover it as well from 9 a.m. And then, good. I'm glad it's not this Monday. A week from Monday, June 5th, 10 a.m. Pacific, we will cover the WWDC keynote, for which I'm getting more and more excited, especially since Costco is selling Mac Minis for $300. That's cheaper than a brisket. They're
actually that
clearing them out.
That is because the Raspberry Pi is so short stocked because of component shortages, that might be actually less than you might pay for like a top of the line Raspberry Pi.
Wouldn't that be
if
wild?
You actually needed one?
Wouldn't that be
with,
wild
with markups?
I'm just gonna stick that behind a screen and make a picture key thing.
You can put Velcro on it and just attach it to the
Asked John, I said, do we need more Mac Minis? He said, well, we have lots of Mac Minis, but they're the old Intel ones, but they work fine. So, they're doing little things.
Such a difference.
I know.
Such a difference.
But they're not doing anything. They're running, software somewhere. I don't know. We'll get them when we need them. Anyway, they're all sold out anyway. But there's still brisket if anybody wants to pick some up. And giant bags of Doritos. Another Tuesday morning, another Apple announcement. They have announced a multi-billion dollar deal with Broadcom. You may remember Apple made a commitment to the U.S. government in 2021 to invest $430 billion in the U.S. economy because all of their money comes from China. So they're going to put it back into the U.S. economy. So they've made a big deal with Broadcom to build 5G radio frequency components in the U.S. When they say 5G, they're talking about phones, right?
Yeah, It couldn't be anything else.
Yeah.
The only question is that does that mean that they're involving themselves in U.S. manufacturing? So does that mean that they're going to be using Broadcom as their chip manufacturer for their own design of modem chips, or does that mean that they're committing to sticking with Qualcomm for their modem chips for the next 2 or 3 years?
Unclear, right? Unclear. The 5G radio. This is from CNBC. The 5G radio components developed by Broadcom will include FBAR filters and other wireless connectivity components, according to the release. These components are different from the 5G modems made by Qualcomm. Yeah.
It doesn't tell us either way. I've seen some people react to this story as saying, wow, does this mean Apple's not making their own modems? And I think unless we hear otherwise, no, it doesn't mean that. They are still doing that, but they have a deal with Broadcom. This is best read, I think, as a we generate jobs in America yes. press release.
It's a political.
And not as anything beyond yes. that, because yeah. it is, I mean, it's great, and they may use Broadcom to build the chips. Somebody's going to have to build their chips. Apple doesn't build its own chips. But so when it does make that move away from Qualcomm, if it ever does, maybe Broadcom helps with that. I don't know. But I think you could read too much into this announcement, because this is in the Apple loves to do these PR blitzes where they're like, look at how many jobs we create. And this yeah. is one of those PR things.
It could be a Foxconn thing too. Remember how they made big noise about, hey, look, we're building actual manufacturing plants in the United States and in the Midwest, we're creating jobs. Then 5 years later, hey, they're basically creating jobs of security guards to mind the empty lot where nothing's being built. Yeah.
We're actually in an old Broadcom office right now, right here. They moved out and they moved next door, and then they've moved out next door. So they moved down the road a piece. But Broadcom was originally part of HP, the semiconductor product division of Hewlett Packard. And then they spun it off to Agilent, which made Petaluma the telecom valley briefly. We had a lot of telecom going on here. Anyway, that's, I guess, you know, they said they'd do it, so they've done it. And they're, yep. Now you have it. Did we learn it? I should have looked at this Worldwide Developers Conference press release. They didn't tell us anything we didn't already know, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. It really was. I mean, what happened today is essentially that the press got invited. We already knew there were developers who were invited. The press got invited today.
We did not get an invite here at MacBreak Weekly, but Jason, I imagine you did.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah. Micah went last year, did not get invited this year.
Did. No. We rode a cart
yeah.
together.
Yeah. You rode golf a cart?
Yeah, golf cart. That wasn't that event. That was a different event, but we did go, and they were like, we'll just drive you over to do this podcast on a golf cart. And we're like, well, how do you say no when Apple offers to shepherd you around their campus?
I think that's fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Was it?
And then you wave at everybody as you go by. It was great.
Did it have leather seats? Was it like a special golf cart?
No, it was not like an Apple golf cart. Oh. It was just a golf cart at Apple.
They didn't let you use the bikes.
Yeah. No. I mean, again, a golf cart driven by an Apple employee taking us where we were allowed to go.
Supposed to go.
Yeah. Exactly. To be clear.
We don't want to be handing you bikes. You
a
might
bike,
start going up into
it's
the little
like
hills.
It's like free range. You could just go anywhere. Yeah.
What's the gaming term? It was on rails. not open.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Because if you get on a bike, they got to like take a metal pole and stick it in the spokes and knock you over and get you out of there. Because
I think they have those little auto locking bikes. Like, nope. Oh, you can't go there.
Not in that zone. It doesn't go to that zone.
Although there were a couple of like people who were posting, developers who got invites to posting about how as the broad like sort of welcome party schedule includes, of course, the keynote, of course, a lunch, the platform State of the Union, all that stuff is like traditional every single year, but followed by a special tour of Apple Park, and then a quote special evening activity that you won't want to miss.
Ooh.
Unquote. And
concerts.
And a smaller event at the Apple Developer Center on Tuesday to quote discuss some of the latest announcements.
Gosh, no, but you know what? I'm not going to check my Gmail. I'm not. I know I didn't get invited. I'm not going to give you the satisfaction, Apple. So, but that sounds
all
like
attendees
fun.
Will be tested for pink eye before the Tuesday event.
You will be going to that, Jason, I'm sure.
Well, that's a developer event. So what they do.
Oh, you don't get to go to the concert.
Is unclear. Oh. Well, it's unclear, right? Maybe not. What is it? It's a mystery. Like, they don't specify. I mean, maybe it's been a while, Leo, but like, they're not really forthcoming about.
Yeah.
They're, you know, I've been told to appear in Cupertino on a Monday morning. And then what happens after
but it keeps you on your toes. It's the wonder of the mystery.
Is there a little Pandora locket, golf cart trinket attached to your, maybe a little hint? No. This is the invite, which I'll have to defer to Matthew Panzerino at TechCrunch for his copy. You're invited, RSVP, to join us in person to watch the keynote address kicking off at WWDC at Apple Park June 5th, 10 a.m. Have fun.
It's the same art that they use for all of the WWDC stuff this year. So, nothing new to be gleaned. Yeah, it's the Apple Park ring and its colors, and some people have said that it also suggests that it's the lenses. The
periscope lenses on the iPhone 15.
Of the lenses in the headset. But we'll see.
Oh, the headset. What's that?
It's a product that you're convinced is not going to happen.
Oh, that one
totally happen.
Not going to happen. Actually, it's not me. It's Glenn Fleischman.
Glenn Fleischman was surprised that they're going to release a headset. I wonder where he's been.
Anyway, so
I haven't checked my junk mail folder yet, so maybe it just like got kicked into junk mail. I'll wait till, but I should focus on the show, so I'll pick that up afterward.
Yeah, we have been introduced to the 2023 finalists for the Apple Design Awards, which will be announced also on that Monday, I think, right?
Yep.
Do you want to know in the inclusivity category, Anne, Universe, Passenger Assistance, Finding Hannah, Ancient Board Game Collection, and Stitch. Those seem like delightful and fun apps, but there is a separate category for those. Duolingo, Cream, Chantlings, Pocket Card, Jockey, Ride On, Not Words, which you recommended, Jason, and I'm still using. Right. Love it. And After Place, Interaction, Shuffles by Pinterest. Can you win twice? So these have to be new, right? Or no? I don't know. I don't recognize a lot of these titles. Tile Guide, Charts and Tables. Flighty, which I do use. It's a subscription program.
I think that was a pick at one point.
That's a great tool. Yeah. Automatoys, Railbound, and Kimono Cats. One of my favorites. For Social Impact, Duolingo again. Sago Mini First Words. Headspace, meditation app. Hindsight, Endling, Extinction is Forever, and Beer Becarbonize, Visuals and Graphics, Any Distance, Gentler Streak Health Fitness, Rivio, Diablo Immortal, the game that costs you forever, Resident Evil Village, Endling again, Innovation, Camo, yay, Camo Studio, Swing Vision.
Yep, another pick.
Yep. Rise Energy and Sleep Tracker. I'm familiar with that. Resident Evil Village. Played that briefly. Stitch.
Yeah, that's nominated twice.
Yeah. And Marvel Snap. Let's look at
one of my picks.
Marvel Snap, yeah. Stitch it to puzzle out. So Stitch, you have to sew according to the numbers digitally. And then it's a Shikaku puzzle.
Yeah, those are always fun because they're not necessarily they're certainly not the most popular. They're maybe not even apps that have gotten a lot of traction. They really are the ones that they're trying to reward developers who are most creative and or support most of what Apple has been promoting as here is what a proper and creative and innovative Mac app or iPhone app should look like. So it's not like the Cable Ace Awards or the Grammy Awards.
They're paragons of Apple virtue.
Yes. Fealty. They bend the knee.
They bend the knee. Anyway, there's the Design Award finalists.
But they're great stuff. Yeah. They're always a lot of apps that I've never heard of. And then when I try them out, they're like, oh my God, how come I never heard of this? This is so cool.
Well, this is for a good example. And the first one I mentioned, Morse Assistant for Deaf Blind People. So you can communicate through vibrations. That's interesting. Oh, Anne is Helen Keller's assistant. That's right. She drew on her hand Right. A deafblind gateway to the outside world powered by Morse code and iPhone haptics. What an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks very pretty, too.
Yeah. Nicely done. That's very cool. So that's just a little sampler of what you can expect. Apple is now appealing. Let's see. It's complicated. The EU tax, remember, Apple won. So it's Ireland that's appealing, or the EU's appealing. Apple won in this overseas tax in Ireland. The back taxes of 30 billion Irish dollars, pounds, euros, that's what it is, 13 billion euros. Apple won in 2020 after insisting in 2020 it would appeal. The European Commission has finally petitioned 3 years later the Court of Justice of the European Union to get that 13 bill. The contention was that Ireland extended preferential treatment to Apple that was illegal in the EU. And so Apple should have paid that tax. And the courts did not say that. They said, no, Apple doesn't owe that tax, which does seem kind of unfair to Apple.
And Ireland said we didn't want it.
Yeah. Ireland said, oh, wait, we already forgave them.
Yeah. Never asked for it.
Yeah. In 2020, July 2020, the EU's second highest court ruled in favor of Apple and Ireland, saying that it was not an unlawful tax preference, but they're going to appeal it. Apple said, we paid our taxes. We paid every penny that we were legally required to. We paid every penny. All right. I think it's time for hands-on. Let's get hands-on Jason Snell. Hands on the hard body, I like to call it.
Easy now.
You have for a week very stealthily been using Final Cut Pro for the iPad and Logic for the iPad.
It's true. Yeah. Embargo just dropped. And what can I say? Logic. So, okay. A lot of podcasters out there who are Mac users have been using Logic to edit their podcasts. I use Logic to edit my podcasts on the Mac. And they are very curious about, would this mean they could edit those podcasts on the iPad or round trip them between the Mac and the iPad. And I'm here to tell you two things about that. One is you could always edit podcasts on the iPad. The app's called Ferrite Recording Studio. It's excellent. It's made for podcasters and you should use it. And two, Logic on the Mac is like, I think last week, is like an app that we can use, but it's like we're using it wrong. It's not for us. It's not made for us.
It's made for musicians.
It's a music app. It's a professional music app. It's not
for editing speech particularly.
Exactly right. I mean, it's not, you can set it up to do it, but it's like it really wants to have musical bars and a tempo, and you can kind of hide that stuff. When Apple built Logic for the iPad, what did they do? Well, they emphasized what it's for, which is music. It's got even fewer of the features that podcasters might use. And while you can edit spoken word things in Logic for the iPad, don't try. It's really unpleasant. You can do it, but it's like, there are so many better options. Ferrite is a much better option. And like, even I tried to bring in a podcast project that I built on the Mac to the iPad. And it said, sorry, although this is a Logic project, it is not saved using the music grid. So although they talk about round trip, it actually is for very specific kinds of projects, which are music projects. Otherwise, it won't even open a Logic project from the Mac. So there's a lot, right? So anyway, Final Cut, I think, is way more interesting. Even though when the announcements came out, we were all like, oh, Final Cut doesn't round trip, and it's limited feature set. It doesn't have all the features of the Mac. It's going to be disappointing, and Logic's going to be exciting. Logic has more limitations compared to the Mac version than you might think, if you're a podcaster anyway. Final Cut's really good. It needs to be better. There's some things they could do to make it better if you're using it just with touch. There are things they could do to make it better if you're using Apple Pencil. But I was able to, once I got the hang of it, and they've done some very clever things to move some stuff around in the interface, I could edit pretty quickly. I think that it's got a huge amount of potential, even if, you know, there's stuff that apps like Ferrite learned a while ago that it needs to learn, like little multi-touch gestures and things to make it a little faster.
Here's a bug you found.
for a pencil.
You dragged a video track and it flipped it upside down.
It turned up. Well, that was right before it crashed. First, it flips it upside down, and that's like the sign of the devil. And then if you continue to use it, then it just crashes entirely. And I found that a lot. I had trouble dragging things around sometimes. Other times it worked fine.
Yeah.
I did capture the moment where it inverted the waveform right before it crashed.
Very nicely done. Yeah, you snagged that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 1.0, but like I feel like they could add some niceties and it would be something. And in terms of the power of the iPad, I mean, we're talking about M1 and M2 devices. They are on the Mac. They're just fine. And guess what? They're just fine on the iPad, too, in terms of editing and exporting, encoding video, all of those things. It just works. So strangely, though, yeah, it's optimized for touch, doesn't have a lot of multi-touch niceties, and the keyboard shortcuts are actually pretty good and can help speed things along because, you know, if you want to split a clip or you want to delete a clip really fast or you want to toggle play or pause on the iPad with touch, you've got to like do a tap or two in a particular place. And if you've got a keyboard, it's just what you're used to, which is press the space bar or Command B to blade the clip or delete key to delete the clip. It's very familiar when you're using that. So like, I feel like they're really close and that this is only going to get better. And if I were to edit a podcast on the iPad and I wasn't allowed to use Ferrite, I'd probably use Final Cut, not Logic, because I'm not a musician and that's not what it's for. It's not their fault, right? Like that's what that app is for. We were just sneaking in there and trying to use it for things it wasn't intended for. But Final Cut, I was really impressed. I think there's a lot of room for it to grow, but I think it's a good start.
And if you were a musician, you might have a different opinion of Logic
for them, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I can't wait to see what musically inclined people say about Logic on the iPad because I've seen enough of Logic to know, like, I'm very impressed with what they put in there, but also it's literally all the features that I turn off on
right.
the Mac. So
right.
I'm not going to give the answer there. I look forward
case.
To the yeah. official musician reviews of Logic.
Yeah. If you're editing audio, there are far better tools. Ferrite's a great one, but they're far better tools, even on the Mac. So it's kind of, but you know what? You have Logic. The difference is you paid once for Logic, probably if you're like me years ago,
a very long time ago. Yeah.
This would be different. You'd have to pay either $5 a month or $50 a year to use it. So it's not.
Ferrite's $20. iPad users, $20.
And out the door. Done. Actually you say 30 in your article, 30 or 20?
Is it 30? Oh yeah. Okay. So it changes. It's free. And
with
then there's an in-app purchase that must be 30. And then what they do is actually you get those features forever. And then the next time he does the complicated thing, that's actually, I think the best way to do software purchases in the App Store, but it's complicated, which is, you know, the next version will come out and there'll be an in-app purchase for existing users that'll be smaller, but new users will have to pay more. And it's like, this is why everybody's given up and done subscriptions. But the guy who does Ferrite has not done that. So it's free to use. And then if you want to unlock the premium features, it's, I guess a $30 in-app purchase, still a bargain, like the best bargain in a non-linear audio editor that you're ever going to see on any platform, I think, other than free. Above free, it's pretty, $30 is pretty cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. there's the pricing. $30.
You can see it, right? It gets complicated. It's like Ferrite 2 Pro, Ferrite 3 Pro. Like, this is why people don't do this. This is why they just do subs instead, because the App Store is so unfriendly to developers who want to do a traditional kind of upgrade model.
Yeah. Well, good. I think, is there a trial period? No. You can't just try before you buy.
Yeah, it's 30-day trial.
Oh, there is? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. Alex, did your people have anything to say about?
You know, not all of us. I'm still trying to download it. It came out today. One thing that Apple is trying to prove is that they're not giving themselves any special treatment because you can't even search for it in the store. You search for Final Cut and then like, nope. And so I finally found the article about Final Cut and then it said, oh no, you have to upgrade. So I've been slowly trying to get my iPad ready to download it. So we haven't, I know a couple people have been playing with it. Philippe Baez, who's in office hours, was doing like a live stream of who's going to edit a music video this morning, but I was prepping for the show, so I didn't see it. But I think a bunch of people are jumping into it. I think it's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of curiosity as to whether this code eventually becomes Final Cut. Like, you know, are we going to just see this become the desktop version? you know, that's, you know, that eventually is just installed once on, you know, like other apps that are M1 that they'll just install onto a Mac mini or a computer or on your iPad. And it's just one code base. Wouldn't, you know, 2 years from now, you know, or something like that, whether they're just going to keep evolving the code, but it looks interesting. I mean, I think that, I'm still trying to figure out where I'll use either one of these because I need all the features that generally are in there, for both of them. So, one question for Jason, does it support the plugins? I mean, does it support third-party plugins?
So the story there is varied, right? Like there are audio plugins that are supported in iPadOS, like audio units. In terms of Final Cut, there are, Apple's given it kind of a hazy story about plugins where there's like, they've got content and they've got, that there's something coming. Like, I feel like it's very much like there's a little post-it note on that part of the product that's like, check back later. So right. I honestly think that it's all in the planning stages, but that they launched this product. Obviously, it's like, they just decided that now was the time to get it out there and now they can start that process. But so like on the audio side, if somebody has released audio units for iPad and a few people have, you can use those as audio plugins. And then,
does the Isotope stuff work in
Isotope does not believe that the iPad is a platform. So no, I would love that. Cause that's what I use.
I know. I was like, I don't think I can do a podcast without RX.
Yeah.
Like
I know. I agree with you. I pre-process. and the answer for people who wonder, how do I edit on iPad? The answer is I pre-process all my audio files on the Mac and then I send them to my iPad for editing.
Right.
Because Isotope is not on the iPad. And then, yeah. Right. So, and on the Final Cut side, like, I think they want there to be a lot more content on both of those apps, actually, in terms of available stuff from Apple and from third parties, which would include plugins. But, you know, it's early days for that, but they did. Yeah. It was a couple of years ago. They put Audio Units 3 on the platform, and I have some that I can use inside Ferrite and other places. And like Fab Filters make some pretty good like compressors for the iPad, and they work great, right? It's just that if you rely on a particular vendor like Isotope, and they seem to be completely clueless about the existence of the iPad,
right?
Then it's not so great, right? And that's where we are with that. I hope this might actually be a spur to Isotope to finally get with the program. But we'll
see. I'm kind of surprised. I thought there was a standard plugin architecture.
Yeah, it's Audio Units 3. It is standard, but you have to, in order to sell it on the iPad, you actually have to make at least a wrapper app and put it in the App Store. And
right.
Isotope
so
doesn't sell in the App Store. They only sell it via their own thing. They've got like a proprietary subscription management thing on the Mac that you have to run. And it's a whole, like, I think there's a cultural problem at Isotope, but I hope they change.
Right.
Also, there's a Final Cut, a new Final Cut was released for the Mac as well. So, you know, there's an update to that.
Is that for feature parity or?
I don't think so. I think it does allow some versions of round tripping, you know, so you import a project. You can't send it to the iPad, but you can take it from the iPad. So if you start a project on your iPad, I think the iPad has less features always than the desktop version. So you can bring your iPad version in and continue it, which is kind of cool because that means you're going to be on the road. You shoot a bunch of stuff, you start working on it, and then you come home and you dump it into the full version of Final Cut and go from there. I think it's got also some HDR stuff, some new titles and effects and a scene removal mask to remove backgrounds, which I haven't played with yet.
So it's funny because those features got announced for the iPad and people are like, oh, those aren't in the Mac. Is there going to be a bifurcation? And the answer is no. There's an update today on the Mac that adds all those features. Those are all there. You mentioned HDR. I will say one of the really interesting uses of Final Cut on the iPad is, I think a lot of people, I mean, if you've got a MacBook Pro, then you've got a pretty good HDR screen. But like, if you don't, or if you're out in the field, having an iPad that's got that full-on HDR display, an iPad Pro 12.9, while you're editing HDR video or looking at HDR video, that's pretty powerful, right? That in your hand, you've got that HDR preview monitor that's also an editor that you can then take back home and import into the Mac side. That's a pretty good story.
It's great. I mean, I know when I'm testing HDR, one of the first places I look is an iPad. I just open it up when I'm, you know, we're
it looks
slowly
great.
Moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're slowly moving office hours to HDR. And so I I'm constantly opening it up and watching the stream to see if it, you know, if it's actually turning out. And so being able to see it when you're, especially in the field, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, my iPad Pro is the best screen I've got in the entire house. And whenever I'm editing something, it's a photo that's taken me like 2 or 3 days to edit, I'm really proud of it. The last thing I check is I'm just going to open it up on my iPad, because if it looks good there, I'm not going to accept anybody's complaints that doesn't look good on their screen, because you need to get a better screen.
Geezer Nerd in our Discord says he did not have trouble finding either app. So I think maybe they've updated the search index now, so it's a little easier to find it. He also answered a question I had. One of the things I loved about Logic on the Mac was it had all sorts of gigabytes of instruments. He says when he installed Logic on the iPad, it prompted him to install 3 different musical instrument packages, classical, electronic, and hip-hop. About 600 megabytes. That's still far short of the total available instrument packages, but it shows you can install them, right?
That's part of that post-it note, right? You can choose to install those at launch, and then you can choose which ones. And Apple says, you know, more to come, basically, from Apple and also from third parties. Good. But, you know, it's day one of these, essentially. So there will be more. And like when Alex and I are complaining about iZotope, I really do believe that all our complaints about Apple not being present on its own Pro iPad platform with its Pro apps, now that it's there, I hope one of the side effects is going to be that some developers that kind of poo-pooed it are like, okay, all right, now that you've got Logic and Final, all right, we'll get in the App Store, fine. And I hope that happens.
I hope so too.
Well, sometimes, I mean, it depends on how important Apple decides that it, how important they decide that having that feature is, because if developers don't move over, sometimes Apple just develops it for them.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we need
it's always the threat,
you know.
Yeah.
Or they promote another, you know, suddenly something that is your direct competitor is being promoted on the part of the platform that you're not supporting, you know. And so those are the kind of things that happen when you don't pay attention. So,
well, it's available now. You can download a Final Cut Pro for the iPad if you have an M1 or M2 iPad Pro, or if you have an 11-inch M1 iPad Air. It does require the M processor, right? I think that was
yes.
Yeah. So and somebody in our chat room saying I have a regular iPad and I don't see it in the search index, so maybe they are filtering it out unless you're compatible. Let's take a little break. More to come with Alex Lindsay, Andy Yannacco, Jason Snell. Our show today brought to you by Melissa, the address experts. From forms on a web page to checkout, customer data comes into your company from many different sources, which I'm sad to say, whether it's a customer service rep entering it or your customer, his or herself, that leaves room for errors and for missing information. But Melissa can solve that. Here comes the personator. With Melissa's Personator consumer tool, you can get a superior snapshot of your customers, because it can enrich contact data, which helps you with analytics, allows for better targeting and marketing campaigns, and maybe even most importantly, helps you with fraud detection. Personator Consumer not only appends data, but also verifies name, address, and contact information, as well as date of birth, social security numbers, for a quick identity verification check. It also enriches data to add geographic and demographic information for you. So not only are you verifying your customer, you're able to provide them the best possible experience with your business. When you have highly specific demographics, you can even personalize your marketing, finding the best leads and offering the best service or deal for your specific customer in their specific situation. With Melissa, you gain access to appendable demographics. Listen to the list, and this is not even the whole list, but things like deceased information, occupation, presence of children, number of adults, marital status, are they a homeowner, are they a renter, what is the range of household income, the length of the residence in the home. All of that is available through Personator Consumer. Melissa's address verification tools leverage 38 years of address verification expertise, and it will fit into any business model, on-prem, SaaS. There's even an API. You can write this right into your own code. Melissa's global service can verify addresses for 240 countries and counting to ensure only valid billing and shipping addresses in your system. And of course, Melissa treats your data like the precious resource it is. They're SOC 2, HIPAA, and GDPR compliance, so you know your data is always in the best hands. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, melissa.com/twit. Melissa, the address experts. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Of course, you support MacBreak Weekly when you go to that address. That way that they know you saw it here, melissa.com/twit. It was a very big quarter for switchers. This is a report from CIRP, C-I-R-P. I don't know how you pronounce that. CIRP. After a report last week about how long Apple users are keeping their iPhones, CIRP is out today with another study digging into how many new iPhone buyers in the U.S. are coming from Google's platform. This is from 9 to 5 Mac. The new survey shows Apple is attracting the most switchers from Android it's seen in the past 5 years. So the steep price, not scaring people off, although Apple does now offer a variety of price points. Largest number of folks switching to iPhone in the last 5 years, 15% of new iPhone owners saying, my last phone was an Android. That's up 4% over last year, 5% higher than 2020 and 2021. 2% of new iPhone buyers say they came from a basic phone. So basic. Or other, or were the first time smartphones. Yeah, akin. That's very basic. Yeah, you know, I would agree, I would like to have a kin. Yeah. So I don't know what that means. What do you think? What does that say about the market?
It probably says that Apple's doing a really good job reaching into countries that have been primarily Android based. That means that they're selling more phones in India. They're selling more phones in Southern Asia, South Asia. All these. It's not. I don't think they're so much. All of a sudden convincing a lot of people in the United States of America to dump their Samsung phones for iPhones. But it really does show that a market that they were under, had a reduced ability to compete in. Now they're figuring out we're building phones that A, comply with local laws that make sense for the consumers in that market. And they're seeing the numbers to prove that, hey, they continue to find people who do not have iPhones yet, and they're going to get them.
Yeah, I think it's also, I don't know, is this wrong to say? Not on this show, but that the Android phone is the phone you get when either you don't care or you don't get to choose. And that if you get the iPhone.
I actually think that it's if you don't care or you care a lot. So I think that the thing is that people who buy the low end ones don't care. They just want a phone. My mom is like that. Then the high-end ones are the people who are really particular. They have very specific needs, so they want to push, you know, they want to customize it in a way that Apple's not going to let you customize it. So I think that Android does have the two ends of that. Apple has folks that just want it to work, and they're not as, I think a lot of times the high-end Android user is much more passionate about what the phone can do than an iPhone user. You know, they really want to push the outer envelope. They want to do those things. With an iPhone user, I think a lot of times they just want it to be easy. Like, it's like, if it's not quite, if the camera isn't quite the same as the Android, but all the other stuff works really well, and I don't have to think about it that much. I think that an average iPhone user just wants it to be in the background, not in the foreground. And I think that that's a distinction between, but I think that the high-end Android user is probably more particular than
That's convincing. In fact, Galia in our chat room, who's Israeli, says she buys Android phones because she can customize them. You can fiddle sense. With them. You can tweak them.
It also feels like we're in a real, you know, there is such a fight for market share and a fight for mind share between iOS and Android. And I feel like we're in a place now where iOS and Android are here. They're not going anywhere. And there's kind of an ebb and flow that's going to happen where different markets, like Andy said, different markets are going to come in that are not very iPhone, and they're going to get a little more iPhone, and that'll be good for Apple. And that there are other markets where it's going to be, is there a hot phone, right? Like, is there a hot phone or a hot phone maker that drives sales to one way or the other? I think Apple is always talking about, I mean, in the US where Apple's maybe over 50% market share, it's a little bit harder for them to pick up users. But like, this is not a scenario where Apple is so dominant in any country that they can't pick up market share. So they'll pick it up here and there, and then they'll lose it here and there, right? And I think that that's sort of the steady state of the smartphone market we seem to be in now, where it's like, you know, you pick your poison. I think there's truth to it. There are two reasons. Like, I know people who have Android phones, and one reason is that they hate Apple, and the other reason is they looked at the price of the deal on the Android phone and the iPhone, and they're like, this is way cheaper and I don't care, right? Like, because if it's way cheaper and you do care, you'll find a way to get to an iPhone, I think. But if you don't care, then obviously you can get a much better deal down at the lower end of the line. Not even the low, but just lower end with an Android phone. So I don't know. It feels like, I know they compete, but like, it doesn't it feel like it's just a war anymore.
The one that I think concerns Google the most is the fact that so many kids under 18 are using iPhones. Like I saw another report this week. It was like 88% or something like that. It's a really high number. And I talked to my kids about it, and it's the bubble.
One of the reasons
exactly what Andy talks about. It's also, like, no one in school wants to have a green bubble. Like, cause everyone's like, oh, don't include them in the group. Like, then they have to go to Snap.
It's also though that generation lacks the antipathy to Apple that older people sometimes have. My daughter, 30, hates Apple. And the reason she has an Android phone is because she refuses to buy an Apple device.
Why does she hate Apple?
I don't know if there's anything Apple can do about this, because some of what people don't like about Apple is Apple users, not Apple, right? there's this sense, you know, the guy who has the notch carved into his hair, you know, there's this sense that Apple, the cult of Mac, is out of, you know, weirdos and out of control and that kind of thing. I think that doesn't happen under 18 so much. That's a kind of leftover from the old days.
I don't know. I mean, that's been there since the 70s, I feel like, on one level. And you can point, I think some people point to it and some people ignore it. And certainly people talk about the cult of Apple and the cult of Mac, and they've been doing that forever. And I just kind of roll my eyes at those people, like, you know, like what you like and dislike what you don't like. And I think kids, even today, I mean, I've got two kids in college now, and you know, there's still ways to line it up. I mean, for gamers, you know, if you're a gamer, the Mac is never going to be on your agenda, for your smartphone, maybe you don't care. And so you see a lot of my son's friends they've got a Windows PC for gaming and they've got an iPhone, and that's just how they live. And I hate to break it to Mac users, and I know this is Mac Break Weekly, but if you do the math, it's impossible for there to be more iPhone users who are Mac users than there are iPhone users who are Windows users. Just let that sink in.
My son has an iPhone, and he just finished building his own PC. so he's, you know, which I proudly supplied the hardware. so for him to put it together. And so, you know, I definitely agree that, and he got it specifically because he wants to do gaming.
I think Microsoft's aware of the fact that there are a lot of iPhone users, because this week, Windows announced the Your Phone, or Phone Link, I guess they call it now, that will work for iOS. It's not as complete as the Android version, probably because of limitations on iOS. But I tried it on Windows Weekly last week, and I set up my iPhone to work with my Windows PC. And you can see messages. You can get notifications. You can send messages. Effectively, you're using Apple's messages on your Windows PC. You can even make calls. So the only thing it doesn't do is the running applications. You can, on Android, you can actually run an Android application windowed on your Windows PC running off your phone. And I can see why that's not possible with an iPhone. But.
Well, that just shows what a different business Microsoft is in. They are the gears and the grease that powers business. So it's 100% in their best interest to make sure that they can support a bring your own device strategy if a company wants to support that. So it's so hard to compare the two directly in any sort of way, shape, or form these days, because it really does depend on what environment are these people in, what country are they in, what kind of money they have to spend. I'm really keen to see this generation of kids who have iPhones, how long are they going to, are they going to continue to be loyal Apple iPhone users when they get well out of college and now they have to buy their first phone themselves? Are they going to settle for something that is still an iPhone, but not the top of the line? Or are they going to say, you know what, for the amount of money I'm going to spend on the middle tier iPhone, I could get something that is flagship grade in a Pixel line or in a Samsung line. I don't know, but I'm not telling them what to do. It's an interesting piece of sociology to examine.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I think the hard part with all of these things is the lock in on either side. So you really have to make a choice. I mean, I think that if you grow up on an iPhone, it's really hard to, you got a whole bunch of apps. It's not just the cost of the computer and the cost of the phone, but the cost of everything else that's related to it and all, you know, comfort and everything else. So I think that that's why there's a lot of talking, a lot of articles about the number of kids that are using one platform is that it's pretty hard to get people to reverse trajectory at that point.
Yeah, but to a great extent, so long as it can run TikTok, so long as it can run a bunch of popular apps that are multi-platform, a lot of people are pretty good. I don't think that's as big a deal. Even on my MacBook, even when I'm not really thinking about being platform agnostic, it's really, really hard to get me so locked in that would become a really, really big, disincentive to switch from one to the other. The thing that really is a big disincentive is just that 3 weeks it will take not to relearn something, but just to retrain my thumb that, no, that's not how you switch from one app to another. I know exactly how you do it, but I'm still stuck to doing it the old way. So as long as people have something that works, they're kind of apt to stick with it.
I understand, Andy, because your thumb is really untrainable. You have a very
rebellious It's a maverick. It's thumb. Unbroken. It's untrained. It's not a yes thumb. That's why I have it on staff, to challenge me, you know, to be that fly in the ointment that gets us to rethink our whole strategy. Yes, he's a pain in the butt, but you know what? We need more thumbs like that.
He's a wild thumb. Hey, you know what? Good news. If you are an iPhone user, France is fighting for you. Yeah. To save your iPhone from an early death. That's the kind of kooky Wired headline. Actually, it's an Ars Technica article from Wired, so they're all Condé Nast. It's all the same. French prosecutors have launched an investigation into the scourge of planned obsolescence, says Morgan Meeker. I'm with them. What they really want is at least that you could change your battery, for crying out loud. But it's all right to repair. This is an article quoting Alexandre Isaac, CEO of the Repair Academy, which is a renowned research and training group, according to Wired, that runs the Toulouse technicians workshop. Every time a new iPhone's released, his team finds another part that has been locked to work only with a specific Apple device. First, it was a chip on the motherboard, then the list of parts
was... This isn't like a government agency, right? This is just a...
I don't know.
Ran a press release and ours picked it up.
I get. Like, I think that's what it is.
It's a little bit more in depth than that.
There is a Paris prosecutor who has decided to take action.
It's more along the lines of a senator who has proposed a bill and you know, it's going to go into committee and then it's going to die in committee. But the senator decided to write this bill so they can get the message out there that they are very much for this thing. Although the thing is, this is France and it's a very, very socialist country, and there are a lot, and they have done, from our perspective, goofier things than order a phone company to say, hi, you've got to re-engineer your entire platform because we feel as though you're abusing the power of the people to do what they need to do in order to tolerate their phones very, very well. So
the contention is that Apple essentially is built into its phones planned obsolescence. Because you're not using standard parts. It's not easy to fix these phones. And so it's a Parisian prosecutor who's investigating. I don't know if that's going to... He's delegated the investigation to France's Department of Competition, Consumer Affairs, and Fraud Prevention. They could fine Apple. And in fact, France was the one that introduced that repairability scoring system, you know?
Yeah. And, they're also on the case for locking serial numbers, for basically having to, you can't just simply buy a battery or buy a screen or buy a camera sensor and plug it in there. It has to be coded for that device for security reasons, of course, and not for reasons to prevent you from getting your device fixed for 1/4 or 1/3 of the cost. And I, as always, I'm not sure what the most correct answer is. In principle, I think that you should be able to fix everything on your own or hire somebody you want to fix it. I think you should be able to get any component you need to and replace it yourself or hire someone to replace it for yourself. On the other hand, a phone, boy, you can't make these things out of Lego and still be able to put it in your pocket and take it out again. But by any measure, I'm glad that government agencies are at least willing to challenge Apple and say, hi, you're going to have to present documentary evidence to back up your assertion that the way that you build up the iPhone is best for everybody, including yourselves, including the consumers, because we've had several years of every manufacturer saying, oh, no. Yes. No, we won't. The thing is, we're concerned about people buying counterfeit printer cartridges and then breaking their printers that are out of warranty. We're protecting the user by locking them into our own super overpriced consumables. Like, okay, go ahead and say that, but now you're going to have to swear an oath under penalty of perjury and actually demonstrate that you are actually telling the truth. So that's why I'm not against these kind of investigations and these kind of queries.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings. I mean, you're right. I don't want any government regulator to specify how a phone should be built, but I do think right to repair is a reasonable thing to demand, to ask. Yeah. So I don't know what the answer is.
This story pushes all my buttons, and I'm like, if I back off of it, I'm like, you know what? Right to repair is good. Having governments say, you know, Apple, there is a line you can't cross in terms of what was said before, the idea that, yes, you want to protect the consumer from counterfeit parts. No, you don't want to erect a barrier that allows you to charge a ridiculous amount of money for the official parts so that people don't bother and they just buy a new phone, right? Like you want to find a way to say yes to the one and no to the other. And some regulation can do that. At the same time, I am reminded that France is the place where for several years, Apple had to sell the iPhone inside a larger box that contained a pair of EarPods because there was a French law that said all phones, I'm not going to do the French accent, must come with a hands-free kit because of, you know, woo-woo scary cell phone radiation. When the world had moved on to all sorts of other kinds of headphones, in France, you got a phone in a box, and that first box contained a phone in a box and a pair of headphones. That's the sort of thing where you look at the regulations and you're like, well, that's ridiculous, but they move so slowly and they're, you know, right? So I love what's at the core of this, which is in the end, you should be able to replace the battery on your phone. And Apple has been forced by others. Apple has been moving in that direction. And I think that's good. And we need more of that because the irony here is you talk about an early death, and yet Apple's support for old hardware in their current OSs is second to none, right? Apple expects those phones to last. It's part of their business strategy. They want you to sell back your old phone so they can sell it to somebody else, right? So it's a bit much to say planned obsolescence, but right to repair, I'm all for it.
It's just super obnoxious when they're coding things like batteries and screens. Yeah. It's like, okay, at that point, you really are just unnecessarily making things more difficult for third-party repair people.
Oh, but we can all agree that HP's requirement that you subscribe to the HP Ink Renewal Service in order to print with your printer is anti-competitive. Yes. But it feels like there's ways you could prosecute that without saying, you know, I mean, I think you're right. There's a line in the sand, and you should make that a reasonable line.
Yeah.
I want to drink some delicious AG1, if you don't mind. Let's take a little break for our sponsor. AG1, like countless others, I want to support. You know, I don't eat right all the time. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I need to supplement my normal regime just to make sure I'm getting the right vitamins and supplements and probiotics and prebiotics and all of that stuff. AG1 is my solution, founded in 2010, part of millions of routines since. It's one simple all-in-one solution for daily nutrition. Here's my AG1 kit. I would recommend you get this. You get the special canister. You get the spoon. You get the AG1 shaker. Just add AG1 to water. Doesn't even have to be warm water, cool water. Shake it up. And you've got, for less than $3 a day, everything you need. Saves you time, confusion, and money. Individual supplements, that can be really expensive. And AG1 is a great daily habit you'll enjoy because it tastes fantastic. Makes it easier for you to take the highest quality supplements, not just for vitamins, but for digestion, to support your sleep. It's really the best bang for your buck. One scoop of AG1, or use these great travel packs. This is what I like bringing with me because I don't have to, you know, package up pills in a pill minder. I just take one of these for every day I'll be gone. Add it to the water, shake it up. You got everything you need. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 by Athletic Greens. In fact, if you order right now, you'll get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. So you're ready to go with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. That's athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. I'm just going to shake this up and enjoy these delicious AG1 by Athletic Greens. athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. It really does taste fantastic. While I'm enjoying this, we can get back to the show. This, I actually need this because I got up really early so that I can watch a very scintillating app Microsoft keynote. June 5th will be a lot more fun.
You rehydrate. At you least, gotta pace yourself. You gotta pace yourself. I know it's a long race. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
You know, Microsoft had one keynote that was so long, they had a yoga trainer come out and help people stretch in the intermission. They didn't have to do that this time, I don't think.
Yeah, that there should have been some notes during that reversal. That's
keep it short. All right, moving right along with the program. Let's talk about June 5th. We're going to see, I think, Glenn Fleischman notwithstanding, we're going to see a VR helmet of some kind, or as
ski goggles. It's ski goggles, I hope, that's the metaphor of the day.
It's a helmet. I hope it's a helmet with a big spirally antenna just sticking out from the top.
Joanna Stern has coined the phrase, which I hope becomes standard, of nerd helmet. I think that's what we should all call it from now on. Go ahead, Alex.
I think it should be. It should also filter the air, and you know, just be a whole
like Dyson does.
I think you do a whole Daft Punk look, you know, and just have it all there. And I think that would be amazing.
Let's do a voice changer in it too, so you can be like Bane, Cylon. Right? And you're like, "Hello, Batman. I hope you're enjoying my Apple headset."
The M1 available for $2.99.
From 9 to 5
has any meeting for me.
From 9 to 5 Mac, Apple has now trademarked at least 5 different names for whatever this new operating system will
Keep
be.
Us guessing.
XROS, Reality OS, Real OS, Reality Pro OS, and XR Pro OS have all been trademarked, but Mark Gurman says he's pretty sure it's going to be XROS. That's going to be the official name. Because it
feels very un-English.
Reality.
Like
I don't like it.
Yeah. I feel like Reality OS makes more sense.
Yeah.
Like it's more Apple-y.
But remember that this is the company that said, okay, so we're creating a brand new music player. It plays music, lots and lots of music. What are we going to call it? The iPod. That's what we're going to go with.
Good point.
And the
Good
thing
point.
Is, and the thing is, and just like the iPad was not, hey, we're not going to call it the
we
tablet.
Sure mocked
we're not going to call
iPad.
It the iMobile.
Slate. But we got used to it. Well, we got used to it.
No, but yeah, Apple Watch is probably the most, the iPhone and the Apple Watch are probably the two most logical things they've come up with so far. But when you have a device like a virtual reality headset, that's going to be simply the launching off point for a whole line of what they hope to be smaller and more practical and reasonable augmented reality things. You could understand if they wanted to have something that was very, very malleable so that they could they could use it to attach the next 5 or 6 years worth of products to it.
Geezer Nerd says XROS kind of stumbles off the end of the tongue, then tumbles down the stairway and breaks its neck. Jammer B says, if we're going to call it Nerd Helmet, Jammer B says we should call it Tenros, which I don't, I hope does not become. Go ahead, Alex. I'm sorry.
No, that's it. That's all. I just think XR is too hard to say.
XR. Also, you kind of expect the word Windows to be in front of those two. Hey, are you excited about Windows XR? Yeah. Like it's a version of Windows 10 specifically for risk-based. Oh no!
Well, and Apple already did the iPhone XR, right? So they've already been they broke that one. I don't know. I mean, I like Reality OS. I know that it's a mouthful, and I know that it does what it says on the tin. In a way that XR, like maybe one day we'll all be like, oh yes, XR, the XR revolution happened in 2023, right now it's sort of like the what now? Like VR people know and AR people know, but XR, it's like too clever by half, but we'll get used to it if that's what it is, I think.
Gurman has in his newsletter pointed out that pretty much every Apple executive has now peed on the XR headset.
That's some sort of like rite of passage, the marking the responsibility for Apple's
The list of names includes Johnny Ive, for crying out loud. He's not even there anymore. Mike Rockwell, who's been in charge of it since 2016. He helped craft the vision, according to Gurman, for the headset and the technology development group itself. Apple COO Jeff Williams, a driving force behind the headset's development for the last few years. Dan Riccio, Rockwell's boss, the conduit between the technology development group and the top executives. He has worked exclusively on the headset over the last 2 years. I mean, that's a lot of manpower, a lot of top-level executives to devote to a product that isn't even out yet. Paul Mead, who's Rockwell's most senior lieutenant, handling hardware engineering for the device. Fletcher Rothkopf and Ray Chang report to Mead. Johnny Ive, although no longer at Apple, pushed the company to avoid designs that isolated you from the outside world. He lobbied for a more portable design, no external base station. He probably didn't like the idea, and I think we've heard this is going to be the case, that there is an external battery attached. Jaws, company's marketing chief, one of the biggest proponents of the headset on the executive team, Phil Schiller, Jaws's predecessor, Frank Casanova, head of marketing for the headset. We know Casanova; he's been there forever. Let's see.
But that makes sense. But Apple doesn't do skunkworks projects.
No, they don't.
Everything they do, the top level of Apple people are always like in on everything.
And this feels like all hands on deck, though. Like that, let's put all the wood in these arrows, or whatever it is they say. Jeff Norris, Johnny Shruji, Shannon Gans, Jeff Stahl. I mean, it's just a who's who of Apple executives.
John Hodgman.
Well, I mean, like, it's all about, I mean, this thing's been going on for what, 7-8 years now? So when I read stories about the executives here, I also have that thought of like, I say, oh, well, Johnny Shruji was really grumpy about this and called it a science project. Okay. When? Was that 2015?
Right.
Was that 2017? Was that last week? Like, we don't know. And the story behind that, too, is that at one point they conceived of this thing having like a little box, like the PSVR has a PlayStation, and the little box did all the work. And then it just sent the images wirelessly to the headset, made the headset lighter. But and apparently they built a processor for that. And then they killed it. And they're like, no, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to do it all on device. So like, if I were Johnny Shruji and that happened, I would be grumpy about it, right? But that isn't – so it's very easy. Somebody in the Discord just said, does anybody at Apple like this thing? Why are they even coming out with it? And the answer is, I feel like what we're getting is the story of 7 years of development of a thing that was like going to be one thing, then it was going to be a different thing, then they couldn't do that, so they made it a different thing.
But here's the question, Jason. Have they now converged? Do they all agree now that this is the right thing at the right
time? Tune in 2 weeks to find out.
I will say that if they're releasing it, I think they probably converged on something, only because, you know, Apple is not afraid of killing things. Like, they're not, like, they'll put a lot of money. You know, I've heard stories of them spending hundreds of millions. This is billions, but
they're almost a decade into on products. Project Titan, the car.
But I'm saying, right. I think it does really feel like we're getting gaslit. there's a lot of lowering expectations of everyone.
So they're telling people, don't expect much. Yeah, this is just a developer unit. Don't expect. And then you think, Alex, we will be blown away a week from Monday?
If they release it, I think it's going to be pretty impressive. Like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if we'll be blown away, but I think if they release a product, you know, related to this, it's going to be probably the best headset that's been released so far. Is it going to make it be enough to turn it? But I think it's probably going Apple. I don't think Apple is going to release something that said, well, it's almost as good as Oculus. I think that's not going to be the case. So I think that as far as commercially available headsets, this is probably going to be the top of the line.
I think that
there's certain numbers that they have to hit, and I think that that's probably 90 frames a second, 6K per eye. Like, I think that that's like a number that they probably have to get to, because, the other ones are, a lot of them are floating in that range or, and so I think that, what makes it good enough for what, a first release is probably, 90, 96 frames, 6K per eye. The knock our socks off is 8 or 10K per eye at 120 frames a second. That's like, everyone, they'll sell as many as they can make. I think that that's probably not the first version, but I think that if they came out at that level, it will be the thing that everybody wants to put on.
It feels like their strategy here is very clearly release the best consumer or commercial widely available VR thing that could be made, right? And it's going to be too expensive and they're not going to sell that many of them, but clearly they've decided, rather than make, because they could have shifted gears again and made the thing that we hear is coming in a year or two, which is the cheaper version. Right. And they're going out with this. And I think the reason is they want to not only claim some territory here, but they also want to set the bar, and they want to say, this is what a VR AR experience is. And if they are clearly better and with these prices, I think that are rumored, I think that's what it's going to be. If they can clearly say, we made the best one, anything less than this is not good enough until we come out with one, at which point we'll change it. That's what their strategy is. Whether it'll work or not, I think is a real question, but I think that that's what they've decided to do, is say, we're going to define this category and try to beat us.
I think that Apple's going to be going the exact opposite in the strategy that they did with the Apple Watch. I think that maybe even just in retrospect, but with the Apple Watch, so long as they got the hardware right, so long as they designed a very beautiful, elegant watch that did not look like a gadget watch, was small enough that the first conversation you have with anybody when you enter a room is, what the hell is that thing on your wrist? The software can come a little bit later. So long as it tells the time and has a stopwatch, they'll sell enough of them to get to the next iteration of the software. I think here they're in the opposite sort of boat. So long as they get the software right, or at least show the potential of what they've got going on with, here is what we think the operating system is going to be for. Here is the sort of experiences and features and functions we want to enable through not only the stock apps, but through what developers can do with it. People are going to be, the first generation of buyers are going to be okay with essentially the Apple Lisa version of the headset. I don't think that they're going to be able to stake out the term that, oh, this is the absolutely the best headset that is possible to be made. It's like, well, it's still too heavy. It still has this clunky battery thing.
But then
someone will say, well, here's what other makers have been making for enterprise that are actually don't have some of these problems, because they've already been iterating for 2 or 3 or 4 years. That's not setting them up for failure, but that's just saying that I really think that Apple's story is going to be all about the software and all about the operating system. So that, because we have $3,000 is setting us up to really, really excited about a $2,000 price tag. A $2,000 price tag is still way too much for anybody but a real motivated enthusiast, or somebody who is going to write an app and make that money back from this app they're going to make for themselves, for this feature that they're going to build for this thing. So they really are not in a position where they have to make something that wins the hearts and minds of everybody. It's not going to be a practical thing for in any way, shape, or form. And once that is sort of, the pressure is off, it comes down to, how fun is it? What how did you design the theater app so that when I'm watching iTunes content, when I'm watching Apple TV content, how fun is it to watch Apple TV content with it? The game developers who have had access to these APIs already probably now for a couple of months, when they show up that first game, how cool is that game? And when someone comes up with something that's actually functional and practical, is that going to say, this is not going to change my life? This productivity thing is not going to justify the $2,000 to $3,000, but I can see how, yeah, the next iteration of this hardware that's a little bit less expensive, a little bit lighter, a little bit more practical is definitely going to be something that wants me to put $1,500 under my mattress for 2024.
Yeah, and I think that they can get away with a lot by calling it the developer edition. So if you're going to release it at WWDC, call it the developer edition. This is just for developers. And so people might even have to pay $100 to buy it. You know, like you have to be a developer. I mean, they may just limit it to developers, which is millions of people, and the most likely wants to pay that kind of money anyway. But I think it's hard to make these. And I think that even at $3,000 or $2,000, whatever that number is, they'll sell as many as they can make. You know, like, you know, I think they don't have the capacity to probably put out a huge volume of them as it is, just because they're very complicated and they're right on the outer edge of what's possible. I do think you're going to probably see a pretty big lineup of partners. So I'm going to guess there's going to be lots of slides with lots of logos on it, and they're going to say, we have hundreds of people that have already been working on this, and we've got blah, blah, blah. You know, like that's going to be, you know, like they're going to, if it's Apple, they're going to show this big, you know, group of people that have already been building things. I think that we're going to see some things that have been running for a while that just happened to work on it. Like the Amazon, I don't know if you buy something on a phone, on your iPhone, it'll ask you, hey, do you want to see this in your house? You know, like for a lot of things. And I think that they're going to show that stuff, of being able to throw that on and be able to walk around a house with, you know, the stuff from I would be really surprised if we don't see a Kia, Home Depot, Amazon, you know, like those ones showing, you know, you could walk around your house with all the new furniture that you just bought and just feel like you're there. And we're going to take the lighting from the location. We're going to light all the stuff and put it all together. And there's a bunch of things that it can do that would be pretty interesting. So I think that those are the kind of things that you're going to see. And then you're going to see a lot of games. You're going to see a lot of, you know, some, I still think we're going to probably see, you know, the Office apps, you know, get activated. And I'd be really interested to see if we get, if we see MLS, you know, like you, when there's a score, you can go back. If you throw on your headset right now, this is the big advantage we've talked about before, is the integration of it with all the other hardware devices that you may have in your house. So it knows where you are in the Apple TV. It knows where you are on your phone, and you can put the headset on and it'll immediately jump into the state that it needs to be in to show you something that was related to what you were just looking at. Is really, really important, because it's one of the hardest things to do on the Oculus headset.
You've stimulated a question that I want to ask all of you. You know, when the iPod came out, it was evolutionary. It wasn't an amazing technological advancement on existing MP3 players. It was evolutionary. And the content was, you know, not new. It was just playing the stuff that you were already used to. When the iPhone came out, it was technically revolutionary. It was the first time we'd seen a pinch and zoom interface. There was a lot of technical innovation. And, you know, the software was, because of it, revolutionary. So I'd be very curious, Alex, two questions, I guess. Is this going to be an evolutionary product or a revolutionary product? Will there be technologies on here that you go, wow, like this foveated vision you were talking about in the Discord, Jason? And then the kind of follow on, will the content be evolutionary or revolutionary? What do you think, Alex?
I think it's all going to be evolutionary. And I think the iPhone was evolutionary. I think the iPhone did what all other apps had. I had a Trio that I could check email. I could go on the web. I could do I had GPS. I had almost everything the iPad did. It's just what the iPhone did. The big difference was the iPhone gave me a new interface for it. You know, it gave me a much sleeker interface.
Well,
to
but
it,
so that's I don't a think technical. It, rev, I mean, the simple maybe. Slab of glass. Nobody done that before.
No one had done that before, but I still, I would still say that it, the functionality of that phone, other than that piece of glass, that was, but I would still argue that that wasn't a huge jump forward. It was just something that, you know, seemed obvious once you saw it. And I agree that the older ones were evolutionary. I think the iPad, there's already tablets out there.
iPad was just a big iPhone. iPad was definitely evolutionary. Yeah.
I think that the evolutionary piece of this is that, you know, Oculus is out there. You know, there's been other things that have been out there that have shown us a lot of what's possible. But I think that, you know,
what Apple's doing. So this will just be a polished Oculus.
Well, like no, I think that it'll be more than that. I think that it'll have, I mean, I think that it's going to have a much higher, I mean, I think it's going to significantly higher resolution, significantly, so it's a higher resolution with a higher frame rate, which makes a huge difference. Like it's hard to describe like what it means when you can see a higher resolution at a higher frame rate. It really feels like you're there, you know, and it's hard for people to imagine until you see it, but it makes a massive difference. And so, but the other thing that I think is, I wouldn't say revolutionary, but I do think that Apple is building a pipeline for generating new content that is much more robust than what Oculus has ever had, you know, and I think that is a huge limiter to Oculus. Oculus is hard to develop for, you know, and it becomes one of those things that's really cumbersome to build tools. Apple has been slowly building the tools in the pipeline for this for 5 years. You know, that when we watched USDZ come out, when we watched Creator, you know, Reality, you know, the Reality Converter and the Reality, like all these reality tools and being able to play with it on the phone and do all the things that they're doing, all of those things become, those are all services that are designed for this headset. Like, you know, like they're not for the phone. You know, the phone was a place for them to play on it. And so they're building this big apparatus because that has been a huge issue. Like when you want to use an Oculus, you can't, you know, oh, I have this and now there's something on my keynote that they want to show me. And if I click on it, I can put this headset on and walk around it and look at it or rotate it and everything else. That means anybody can create something for the headset. You know, anybody could create potentially something in Keynote that they can sit there and just click on these things and they're all popping up and it's an adventure that a teacher can create or an individual can create for other people or a salesperson. That's the kind of stuff that I think Apple's going to do that Facebook just doesn't have the tools to do. They don't have the, and so I think that that's going to be something that's really interesting. And I think Apple is very committed to it. You know, and I think that we're going to see a lot of different kinds of content. I think Apple is going to fund a lot of things that go into this. This is an all or nothing thing. If they actually announce it, you know, in 2 weeks, I think you're going to see, or a little less than 2 weeks, you're going to see an enormous amount of investment into this channel because they can't afford to lose. Like they can't. I mean, they can't afford to have this not work. So,
Andy, what do you think? Evolutionary, revolutionary?
I think that their roadmap is revolutionary. I think that what they're going to show off in 2 weeks is evolutionary. I think that they have, I hate to use a buzzword, but it's perfectly descriptive. They have the longest runway of any company that wants to get into VR and AR. They can basically have a 5-year plan that is predicated on them making no real progress for the first couple of years, except for getting everybody primed for version 3 of this headset. So if all they do with this first demo is, again, show off a really cool play in terms of packed in apps, the things you get for free with the device, all of your Apple TV stuff, all your iTunes stuff, we've made this really cool theater sort of thing. And also this really cool environment where you can actually be watching the movie or watching the TV show with your friends. And it's like and if your friend is quote sitting unquote to your left, you hear them. They're making wise comments from the correct side of your face. I think that's gonna be enough because again, they have enough time to figure out what kind of people are going to be buying this stuff. What are they going to be using it for? We know we got games. We know we've got, we have training, basically collaborative shared experiences. Do we have something that is an iPhone sort of device? Do we have something that's even an iPad sort of device where someone changes the way that they work because they have one of these things? Or the ideal is going to be that someone isn't just, hey, I've got, I'm the sort of person who can blow $3,000 today and maybe $1,200 5 years from now on this gadget that looks like a lot of fun. And at the end of the day, we buy an iPhone because we can see ourselves doing things that we couldn't do before. We see this going to save, it's going to solve problems for us and create opportunities. And that's why we spend $1,000 on a phone. So they have 5 years to figure out how to make that argument to us. I don't think they're going to be able to make it in the first year, but I do think that they have a 5-year plan that says that here is something that you haven't thought of. There's the implications of having a collaborative environment in which it doesn't matter that everybody has the thing strapped to their face, because no one's actually looking directly at anybody's face to begin with in this conversation.
So evolutionary, then revolutionary.
I am actually going to come. I'm betting on black and white. As long as it's not a 00, I'm a winner.
Jason, what do you think? Will this just be an evolution of existing hardware, or is it going to have some technologies in it that change things that are superior?
Like Andy, I'm going to cheat. I think hardware wise, it's going to be evolutionary, right? I think none of this, there have been some great videos and articles that have broken down the rumors about the hardware. We actually got a bill of lading analysis this week, right? About like what the parts are. I think everybody knows what the panels are and
what are they? Because last I saw, there were conflicting reports. The information thought 2 8K displays, but the others said 2 4K displays.
What? Yeah, there's a little lack of clarity, but it's going to be like $1,400 to $1,600 just in parts, right? So it's going to be very expensive, but we know it's going to be pretty good. And none of that, like Apple is not rumored to have invented a new X for this, right? So it's going
to
be
Johnny Ive wanted it to have your eyeballs, a screen.
Yeah, Mark Gurman still thinks that that's going to happen.
Screen that's your face.
Cannot imagine that.
Now, I would say that's revolutionary. As stupid as it is, dumb as it is, it's still something nobody ever did or thought of. So it's
true. I mean, they could surprise us. We've been talking about this for so long, and yet they could possibly surprise us. But they're assembling these things in a factory, so probably not. But what I would say is, while the hardware is going to be like a spare no expense evolution, it's like really nice VR hardware. The revolutionary part, if it's possible, it'll be in the software, and it may not be there, or it may be there, or we may get a glimmer of it. But I do agree with Andy that that is where you get some of that secret Apple sauce, is what if Apple releases this thing and we all look at it and go, oh yeah, you know, I've used a PSVR, I've used a Quest. It's like that. Well, okay, that's not revolutionary, but I do think that they're behind the scenes for 7 years working on this thing. I sure hope there are things in that demo that we look at that we go, oh, wow. Oh, what an interesting idea, right? Like that they have done some stuff that we haven't really seen.
I would consider a foveated view to be unique. Nobody's doing that, right?
I think somebody is. I think there's another headset out there that does foveated rendering. I don't think they're unique.
Maybe a high-end. Pimax, PIMAX has a. But no, whoever heard of them?
Yeah. So I think the hardware, you know, is going to be really, really good, but not beyond what we expect the best to be. I do think the wild card is software, because I don't think that is a field that has been completely tilled, right? Like different people are trying different things. And if there's a through line through a lot of Apple's successes, it is that it's not that it was revolutionary, but that they had a way to apply the existing tech and their software to make something that redefined what that product category was. And if they can get away with something like that in June, that, or start getting away with it beginning in June, I think that would be the thing to look for, is just how different is that? Or what do they always say? Blow away. It's blow away, they say, losing all sense of grammar. That's what I'm intrigued by, because I love the idea that they're going to come out with some stuff for VR that everybody who's used VR up to now looks at and goes, oh, that's so much better than what I've seen before. I hope to see that.
Well, and I think that the content is going to be important, like what content is available, what content is coming out. And I think that that's going to be as important as the software is to there's plenty of content that a bunch of us have worked on that never saw the light of day that we were like, this would sell a lot of headsets, but it was really hard to make, you know, and we have to remember that Apple bought Next VR. So there could be things where you have stereo VR of, again, in locations at a much higher resolution. And again, the frame rate and resolution are going to be a big deal. If they turn that corner, there's a lot of things that become very possible and very interesting that just haven't been there yet in anything that we've seen so far. So, and that takes a lot of processing. I think one of the big advantages that Apple has here is, to get back to the software and the hardware, is they're making the chips. They're making every bit, you know, they're making the chips and they're writing the software, and they can integrate it with an iOS solutions, tvOS solutions, macOS solutions, right. and being able to have all of those things integrated into one unified experience where you put that on as part of a bigger experience that's there, I think you know, Apple may fumble it. I mean, there was the trash can Mac Pro. so when we there was, you know, they're like, there are, it's, you know, it's not that they can't do that, but they've been working on it for so long and they built such a ramp for it. And, you know, I think that it'll be really interesting. I'm obviously very interested to see what happens.
Yeah. And one of the biggest assets they have that no other competitor can even approach is that they've developed a lot of good credit with their developer community. We talk a lot about how sometimes Apple underserves their developers. But one thing they always come through with is that if they tell you that, hey, we are investing in this direction, for here's how we're going to do cloud sharing, here's how we're going to do multiple displays, here's how we're going to do X, Y, and Z, here's our plan for whatever. If you are excited as a developer about what you could do with these new APIs, you know that Apple is not going to pull the rug out from under you after 2 or 3 years. They're not going to switch messaging platforms on you because somebody lost a bet and someone ran out of time on their career meter, and now they're messaging app that they've been championing at the company is dead, and someone else messaging app is coming in instead. So if you feel so, and because Apple also has some of the most creative and passionate and artistic developers out there, they're exactly the sort of people to, you know what, I got $3,000, I'm going to buy one of these things because I'm just curious to see what I could build with this. And then after 2 or 3 years, they become like the Omni Group, this company that a company that does for Apple VR what the Omni Group did for Next and then Apple, saying we are not just writing incredibly good and innovative apps, we're writing incredibly good and innovative apps that uniquely take advantage of what this hardware and what this operating system, what these APIs can do. So they're in a really, really good position. I just don't think it's going to be for another couple of years yet. One of the things, just to I'll be quick about it, is that with hardware devices like this, the first thing you have to see is who is manufacturing the sort of display technology that they're going to need to really pull this off. You're not seeing it. Who's going to have the sort of camera technology that can make them pull off what we're hoping that they'll pull off? No one's been showing that stuff off yet. So we're still going to be limited to relatively low frame rate, high resolution, but not as high as what we would like, very limited field of view. So there's not a whole lot you can do when you can't give people a peripheral vision. So they're going to be stuck with what they can serve, given the components and given the technology they have available to right now. But like I said before, so long as they say that we've got our software story on lock, we've basically prepared this runway. We're not going to get there. We're not going to take off for 3 or 4 or 5 years. But oh boy, if you got $3,000, you're going to have fun. You're going to have fun on the steering this plane left and right on the ground.
And I think that they may not have a consumer device that's even aimed at the consumer that even has a production for right. At least a year, if not two. Oh. So the thing is that this is going to be the way you get this is you're a developer and you buy the developer edition, you know, maybe the only way you buy this for a year or two, and they'll still sell millions of those developer editions.
I don't think that Google Glass is the champion that anybody wants to emulate, but some of the smart things they did do was, we're calling this the Explorer Edition, just like you alluded to before. It's called the Developer Edition. And we are not we're not putting these on pegs at Best Buy. If you send us an email and make a case for what you would do with this and why you would be useful for us as we're trying to figure out if this is a thing or not, in bit and dribs and drabs, we will allow you to pay $1,500 for this thing. That means that the first people they got were people who were either A, journalists on expense accounts who really wanted to just rip on that and get lots of copy out of it, which is fair. This is what we do for a living. But also people who are invested emotionally. And boy, I've always thought this is a technology that could happen. And I'm willing to spend a lot of money for a half-baked product, because this half-baked product is the best that we have, half-baked though it is. So this is why it's going to be exciting for the next few years.
Yeah, I think that the one challenge with Google Glass was that the folks that got into it first were really into it and weren't thinking about all the impacts that they have on people around them. So what really hit, you know, the camera, which was the coolest part of the Google Glass, the fact that you could see the viewfinder right in front of you and have a camera was amazing. And it's still the best version of that I've seen so far. But of course people started using them everywhere and it made everybody uncomfortable. I really believe that was the downfall, was that camera, but you couldn't take it away because it was the coolest part of the whole. I mean, it's what I use. It's one for Glass. Primarily what I used it for was to shoot videos of things right in front of me where I could point to things, or with my kids or with other things, you know, you could create things that you just never were able to create before. And it's not the same as these little Facebook Ray-Bans because I can't see what I'm shooting. I can shoot towards it. But what was great about the glass is that I could see what I was shooting. And anyway, it was
I won't turn this into this is starting to be one of those great conversations we have when you're staying over at my house suddenly realize that, hey, if you have to leave for your plane in 8 hours, it's too late. Let's just stay up all night. I keep thinking that all Google needed to do was add like a 22-cent piece of plastic, just a permanent cover for that camera. That's orange, that says that, oh, well, I'm sure you've heard that does have a camera built into it, but as you can see, there's this big block of orange plastic in front of it that's covering the lens. You don't see anything that looks like a lens here, do you? And of course, when I'm taking pictures, I'm playing with my kids, I want to take pictures of video of me playing with my kids I flip it up and that's what you can see. But oh no, of course, the last thing Google wants to do is make you worry that when you're talking to me that you're being, oh dear, 22 cents. I go, 3D printer, 22 cents, 18 minutes. Beautiful.
Let's not forget that Google Glass was more than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
It was so great.
It was such a great piece
of hardware.
It was great. I loved it. Apple had the Newton Message Pad before they had the iPhone and the iPad.
Yeah.
There could be an analogy here where Google Glass had a lot of great ideas. It was before its time. And maybe there's going to be part of the problem is going to be the generation that's really going to slam dunk this is the generation that grew up with smartphones, grew up with the expectation that, yes, there are always cameras on me. Yes, I'm always sharing my life with total strangers. And those are going to be the people who are going to be less worried about themselves going out in public with a device that everyone knows is partially a camera. And they themselves are going to be less concerned in certain social groups with going out with people who are also wearing cameras on their faces. Who knows? This is a social experiment. So I love about technology, it is a social experiment, not just a commercial and a technical one. It is ways that we learn about ourselves and who we are as a species. It's time and time again, we ask questions that we would never have asked before because we never had a need to ask before.
Also, I think Apple might be starting to say, gosh, we should have, I know Meta is saying this, we didn't know that AI was going to become the next big thing, and we missed that one. I find it really hard not to be skeptical and just think this is a terrible idea and it's not going to go anywhere. The one technological advance that would make me second guess myself is if it's really small and comfortable. I don't think it's going to be. I think we're pretty sure it's going to be big and heavy. But that would be the one thing. I just am very skeptical. Having bought every VR helmet, every nerd helmet available, I've seen zero progress. It's just there's no reason to think that anybody wants this. Anybody would buy it for any price. I don't care what
Apple Store is. I think that's going to be the interesting thing I'm more optimistic than you are, Leo, but I think it's entirely possible that you watch that demo and say, see, I told you there's nothing else here. I think it's possible. And I'm curious to see what, whether they really advance the ball or not, because that's going to be, I think, a huge question here. Because if it's more of the same and you just look at it and say, oh, okay, it's just more of the same, I think you're on much more solid ground.
Well, and there's a risk that, I mean, I was just watching the Microsoft Build conference, of course, their developer conference, but there's a risk that a lot of the developers who might consider VR content are saying, yeah, I'm going to work on that AR thing. I just, that's where it's really happening. Don't know any, what developer would say, oh yeah, VR, now it's going to happen. They're going to have to really do some pitching.
Yeah. But you know, if you've spent the last 10 years of your life working in VR, AR, you're not going to suddenly pivot to artificial intelligence. I mean, you've got the skills you need to build. And well, also Apple's got the checkbook open. If you've been working in AI, that's where you're going, going as
well.
If
you're a graphics person, I guess, huh? I mean, well, we have a friend, Gary, who's been VRing for more than a decade, I think 2 decades. Certainly, that's the first time I saw a VR helmet was at the SIGGRAPH in 1992. And he's excited about every one of these that comes out. And they never he returned his Oculus Pro because it's just
but there's a lot of, I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of technologies that we talk about that takes some time to, you know, get from one side to the other, you know, and I think that it is, and a lot of it has to do with just the money that's required. But I think that I wonder if Apple will also take some guide from Epic. One of the biggest successes to moving things forward and for Epic has been the mega grants. You know, those have been like, it's not an investment, it's just money, you know, and you can, if you're developing something new that's interesting, we're going to give you some money to do it. And it can be, in the thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. And I think that Apple should hopefully look at that really closely and go, well, we're going to give a bunch of developers, like if they announce that they're going to give a bunch of developers grants, you know, to go out and experiment with it, I think that gets a lot of developers interested pretty quickly.
Yeah, but it is a good thing to be concerned about, because generative AI is something that is kind of right up Apple's street in terms of what they feel themselves to be a company, the sort of products that they like to do as a company. When you talk about Armageddon, we'll put that to aside. We'll focus on the idea of, you know, here's how easy it is to write software. It's like if you can just simply describe it, our generative AI will we have a new version of our developer kit that can co-pilot whatever it is you're trying to write. This is not for professionals, because professionals are going to want to fine tune things better, but this will walk you through the development of Mac and iOS software. If you took a bad picture, we've got onboard secure privacy or privacy oriented software that will do stuff like what we're seeing in the new Photoshop beta. That's basically saying, yeah, my daughter brought a guy that she's been dating for 2 weeks to a big family wedding, and now he's in all the wedding pictures, and now we need him gone. And basically, boop, not just simply magic eraser, but it looks like nothing was there to begin with. All of this sort of stuff is empowering people, allowing them to do things they couldn't do before, to explore parts of their creativity that they didn't have the technical skills or the technical training to be able to explore before. Yeah. So if Apple products are not the sort of thing that lets you do that, and you have to buy something else and use it with an Apple product, that kind of makes Apple stuff lesser than, particularly compared to what Windows will offer, particularly compared to what Android is going to offer.
I think that what will be interesting again is, I don't know if you need generative AI as much as you just need to have a really large library of things. So like, for instance, if someone puts a headset on and goes, give me a chair over here, and I need this over here, and I need that over there, it doesn't need to build those from AI. It could have huge libraries of stuff. And maybe those are from IKEA, from Home Depot. And I could walk in and say, I want this here, this here, this here. And
how start often talking do you do that, though? Having it.
Oh, no, yeah. One, because no one, it doesn't happen.
But what if you could? How often would you do it? You wouldn't do it every day. You wouldn't do it every week or month. You might do it once in a while. That's not a big market. There's one other thing that psychologically, and this is a really far out there, though, but I notice that people are watching less TV. They're listening to fewer podcasts. Pandemic is over and we want to go outside. And it seems to me this might be the wrong time to put out a product that fixes you in front of a screen and isolates you from the outside. It may psychologically be just the absolute wrong time to release this product. I'm just throwing it out there.
Maybe, but the problem is that if you look at the success or not or lack thereof for events, that's not been the case. You know,
no, like people don't want to go to an event either. They want to go for a walk.
They don't want to go to offices. They don't want to go to events. They don't want to, you know, like, so, but I'm just saying that I don't, maybe that's the case, but there's also a lot of people that are, you know, and I think that, I do think that when you're seeing drops in a lot of these things, you know, I am looking at my own behavior. There's other things that are coming up. So like a lot of magazines having lots of audio has filled a lot of my time that used to be podcasts, you know, like, and so, you know, I listen to whatever it is, news over audio or whatever all the time, you know, like, because it's just popcorn of audio that didn't exist a year ago or 2 years ago. At least I didn't know about it. And I find myself, I almost never watch broadcast TV anymore. Like I watch a little bit of a show that I'm interested in, Netflix, or a show on Apple TV. And then almost, you know, a solid 60-70% of my viewing is in YouTube.
You're not normal, though. I don't think you're the typical.
I don't know. I talk to a lot of people that talk about how much they're watching, because it's about things that you're interested in. It's not that people are watching goofy things on YouTube. It is, yeah, I need to know how to do this thing. Like, my son built a PC by watching a video on YouTube. My daughter plays three instruments, which she's only learned by watching YouTube. like literally, she's taking almost no lessons on
these instruments. And so, I just don't think we're normal people. But
I don't. I mean, it just seems like in their world, I will say it is like the culture of you go to YouTube to learn how to do things. Like, it's just, you know, like that's how they, you know, absorb it in a way that looks really painful to me. Like learning how to play a piece of music by stopping and rewinding to me is like a little version of hell. But she figures out how to do it, and she learns whole songs like once a week.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. Well, we'll see. I'm just giving Apple an excuse for when it's a huge flop, which it's going to be. I don't know. I wish I didn't. I hope I'm wrong, actually, because I think, you know, that sci-fi premise of a metaverse is very exciting.
So much of it has to do with hardware. I mean, I walked in, in 1998, I walked into a gray room that was probably 20 feet by 20 feet. There was a big umbilical cord, and I put a headset on, and I said, give me a cube this big. And I put my hand out, and it appeared, and I was able to pull it and turn it and everything else. I only had a couple minutes in there, and I was like, oh my gosh, by 2005, I'm not going to have to use a mouse to model. I'm going to be able to do all this stuff and everything else. And when you dig into it, it's just the hardware is so hard to do that well. And it comes down to, you know, frame rate and resolution are just very unforgiving things. And people don't want to have something on their head that is low resolution or low frame rate. You know, like that bothers them. And they don't know it, but it just becomes tiresome for them. And as that frame rate and resolution go up, it feels more and more natural for them to be in those areas. And so I think that's why I think that all the work that I've done, and I mean, I've done a lot of AR and VR work for companies, and it really came down when that resolution and frame rate started going up. You spent more and more time in the environment.
Yeah, but that's just where. But AI comes in that kind of space too. When you think about this device that is almost certainly going to have cameras that are taking in the environment around it, just by virtue of the fact that you're walking around your office or walking around your house. It could be using neural radiance fields to be always building and updating a 3D model of your environment 100%. and inviting other people to share that environment with you. And we talked about this briefly last week, where Google's super demo, super vaporware, super realistic 3D video chat booth technology is about, you think that you're looking at video of somebody, but you're actually looking at a 3D model of them that's being updated and redrawn from whatever perspective it needs to be at. So this is where one of the minor news stories this week is about how Apple job listings have a lot of stuff for artificial intelligence researchers, artificial people who are building practical things with AI. And yeah, it'd be nice if they updated Siri with something more conversational. And that's one way they could leapfrog their competitors for the first time since the product really came out. But if they have this holistic approach that we can actually create these experiences that aren't just this weird, super smooth, super shaven version of Mark Zuckerberg, this fixed face in virtual reality land. It's just that incidentally, I didn't have to build this model of my living room. It just simply exists because this is where I've been using this VR headset. I didn't have to create models of the people that I'm talking to because these things just happen to exist because of the fact that they've been using these VR headsets for so long. And then all of a sudden you're using iMessage and you think that, hey, great, I've got this great virtual HD screen in front of me so I can actually be engaged in what I'm doing, but also have this chat. But then there's a software update where there's a third icon where it's like, would you like to actually be in have this person virtually in this shared space with you instead of in a square? That's the sort of stuff that it's going to have to be a holistic approach of everything. And it's not something that we're going to see until all of these Legos snap into place.
I'll be really surprised if Memoji doesn't show itself in this. I feel like they've been building up Memojis for a long time.
Giant poop emoji right there on top of your desk.
But the Memojis, I mean, Apple is the only company so far, in my opinion, that has figured out a way to build versions of ourselves that look cooler than ourselves, because all the other ones look like kind of a weird, dorky version of every. I mean, every other AR head is like, wow, that looks stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, you know, I can do a stupid version of myself. And my Memoji, I'm like, I wouldn't mind if I looked like my
Memoji. Do you use it?
And so, sorry?
Do you use it a lot?
Yeah, I use it a lot. What do you send it to? I send it to my family and friends. And like, that's how I do, like, instead of having to smile, a lot of times it's my little head or whatever. And it's the thing that's on all my computers when
actually,
I log in.
I use it as an emoji. That looks like
an emoji. I don't use it as much with video.
Yeah.
If it was easier, to be honest, if it was easier to export it, I would probably use it a lot more. It's just that it's like this weird thing that's in clips or in messages. If they had Memojis able to be exported and opened in Motion or in Final Cut, people would use it for all kinds of things, maybe things they don't want it to be used for, but that would be they would definitely be more, it'd be more useful. So, but I think that I feel like when I saw Memojis the first time, I was like, oh, they're getting that ready for the headset. You know, like that was immediately, the moment I saw Memojis, I was like, that's what you replace your head with. And you get everybody working on it for years and you get them comfortable with the version that they have. And then when they see their friends, you know, with that on their head or whatever, they're going to be comfortable with it because they've been seeing it for years. But the moment I saw it, I was like, I know what that's for. So
I guess I'm just a grumpy old man. We'll find out. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to June 5th and to see what it is. And I'm sure that I will be living in the reality distortion field for at least a little bit. The buzz and all that. Let's take a break. When we come back, your picks of the week, my friends. But first, I want to give a little plug to our great Club Twit. This is one of the things Lisa came up with a couple of years ago as advertising started to dwindle during COVID. And now, of course, with the debt ceiling default imminent, advertisers are very, very nervous about everything. We decided
our unique international macroeconomic headwinds.
Yes. We decided maybe we should let our audience help support the network. And you have come forward with great gusto, and I'm so grateful to our 7,000 Club Twit members. But I also note that's only about 1% of the total audience, which means there's a lot of room for growth. So let me give you a pitch, because if you're hearing this, you're not a Club Twit member. I know that because Club Twit members hear no ads. That's the first thing you get for your $7 a month, an ad-free version of every show we do, including this one. You also get shows we don't put out anywhere else. Our Hands on Macintosh show with Micah Sargent, or Paul Thurrott's Hands on Windows, or the Untitled Linux show, or Stacey's Book Club, or brand new. This is another great thing. We're able to bring back shows that in the past have not self-supported, but the club can support, like Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, which is now back in the fold. We're really thrilled to have that. And a whole lot more. We also have special events. We have a great Discord, which is full of wonderful people talking about not just the shows that are going on, but everything in one's geek life. I'm sure, in fact, I'm pretty sure we have a AR VR section. I'm sure that'll be heating up pretty soon. with all sorts of conversations. There's the book club, there's coding, there's fitness, there's music and movies and pets and a whole lot more. If you're not yet a member of Club Twit, $7 a month, you get all of that. I think it's a great deal. We have family plans. We have yearly plans. We have corporate memberships as well. Just go to twit.tv/club, twit.tv/club. And I would thank you in advance because we know you'll want to be a member and support what we do here. It really helps. It makes a huge difference. We appreciate it. Jason Snell, let's kick things off with your pick of the week, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. That's why I put a pick in the document, is because I, in fact, I love it.
You have a pick.
I do. Just out this week, MimeStream version 1.0. I've been using this app. I think it's been a pick before for a couple of years in beta. They kept adding features. They kept saying, we will let you pay for it at some point. That time is now. There's a special deal. It's a subscription thing. And here's what it is. It's a Gmail client that is written entirely in Swift for macOS. So if you use Gmail and you would like to use an email client that's made for it, not one that uses IMAP to kind of map mailboxes to tags and stuff like that, but something that uses everything that's in the native Gmail API. So you can set filters and vacation messages. You can do very quick searches. My favorite thing, the reason that I keep using Gmail is, of course, guess what? Google's good at search. I can search all my messages from within MimeStream, and it's just as fast as searching within Gmail, except I'm in the context of a Mac app instead of in the context of a web browser window. So since I switched to this a couple years ago, I haven't looked back. It's a 5-person team led by Neil Javari, who is used to be on the Mail team and the Notes team at Apple, and he has decided to go out on his own and make a really good standalone Mac app. They say their next step is going to be an iOS app, but they, you know, obviously they've just launched the Mac app at 1.0. But having used it for almost 2 years now, I can tell you it's really good. If you love your Mac and you love Mac native software and you use Gmail, it's got some really nice Mac stuff too. Like, it supports focus filters. So like, you can have multiple accounts and you can have them be in different profiles where, you know, your business profile has your three work Gmail accounts and your personal profile just has your personal. You can toggle between them. You go into a focus mode, it'll automatically toggle between them. Just a lot of really nice touches while also being a first class Gmail citizen, which differentiates it from all of those email apps that are based on IMAP, which is like the standard, but is weird with Gmail. And as a Gmail user, I love it. I have not looked back. I'm so glad that it's out and that I have signed up for my subscription to it, because I wouldn't go back to any other client.
Makes me jealous because I don't use Gmail and I would love it. But
next on their list after iOS will be support for IMAP. But the problem is it's the exact opposite problem of most mail clients in Gmail, which is you're trying to translate one metaphor into another and they're not the same. IMAP and Gmail just aren't the same, so you have to kind of fake it. So if they do it, they're going to have to do the other thing and try to fake it the other direction, but iOS first for them.
It's been beta for a couple of years, as Jason said. It is now official version 1.0 of MimeStream, free for 14 days, then $30 for your first year, $50 for the second and subsequent years. MimeStream.com if you want to look, or just look on your Mac app store for MimeStream. But again, Gmail only, just to be clear.
Just for Gmail. I got some fan mail actually yesterday where somebody wrote to me and said, thank you for calling it a Gmail client and not an email client.
Right.
Like, it's very important.
Right.
It's not an email client. It is a Gmail client. It only works with Gmail. But if you're a Gmail user, you should check it out. And a Mac user, you should check it out.
Nice. Sure. Mr. Andy Inako, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is an old Mac game that has been rewritten to be new and work with Apple Silicon. It's Glyffa. It's called Glyffa Vintage. You can go get it on the Steam game platform.
This is Joust.
It's Joust, but it's been available. It was one of the earliest really, really great games for the Mac. It's a simple left button, right button to go left and right. Press a space bar to flap. Other people are also riding ostriches or whatever it is, and with lances. So long as your lance is higher than the lance of the person you're bumping into, you win, and you can scoop up an egg. If theirs is higher than yours, then you die. And you keep repeating that until it's time for your Zoom meeting. But it's exactly the sort of game that I like. I don't have enough time for weeks and weeks and weeks of these beautiful, wonderful, immersive cinematic games. I just want something to have some fun with for about 10 or 15 minutes at a time and then maybe get sick of in 2 months. For $4, it's a lot of entertainment. For those of you who are of a certain age, you will say, oh my God, I'm right back in the computer lab in the high school, and I'm being told, hey, you're not supposed to be playing games in here. You're supposed to be working on your term paper. And I'm saying, go to heck, because I'm the person who keeps these things maintained. If you want me to get that printer spooler working again, you'll let me play another round of this. I'm sorry.
Oddly specific, Andy.
It was a lusty adventure. It was
like you were there. Glypha Vintage is on Steam, so you can get it on your Steam.
$4 damn, definitely worth it. It's really cool.
You know, when I first saw just the simple screen, I thought, "Oh, this is a Dark Castle," but it's kind of Dark Castle meets Joust.
It's that era where they had to make knockoffs of popular games because those games weren't available on the Mac, and they all look kind of like Dark Castle, but this is the Joust one. Yeah,
You can play it on Windows as well if you wish.
Yeah,
Glypha, good pick. Thank you, Mr. Alex Lindsay. What's your pick this week?
So I wasn't sure we were going to talk about it during the show. So I just waited because I had a couple things to stick in there. But ChatGPT is now available on iOS with its own app. OpenAI has put it out. It's way better than going to the web page. That's all I have to say. And if you have some other, stupid version of it that all these people who are using the API and trying to put some front end on it and doing whatever, you should just get this one. It works. There's nothing special about it. It doesn't do anything more than the web page does. It's just way easier. Now you can open up. It never asks you to log in. You can just, I think you log in once or whatever, but then you're just using it. And it's just so much fun. I'm not trying to write a research paper with it. I'm just having it entertain me, doing crazy things like making up fortune cookies. And I have my new obsession has been to ask it to do prompts for me. So I go, I said, you are a designer and a prompt expert. I'm looking for a logo that is this, and this. And I give it a little thing, and then it creates this huge paragraph that I look at and go, I don't think this is going to work in Midjourney. And I tell it to do it for Midjourney. It writes this thing for Midjourney that is really long, and I put it in Midjourney, and it looks great. And I'm just like, okay, the machines know how to talk to each other. They understand each other.
What the AI researchers were saying. What happens when we let these AIs build their own railroad track for them to follow?
I'm already waiting for the pipe that goes from ChatGPT into Midjourney, so I can say, hey, ChatGPT, make me I need a graphic that looks like this, and then have it just iterate and then hand me back a couple hundred photos to look at. What do you think of these? And then I select a couple, and then it gives me a bunch more of those. So I'm waiting for that all to get tied in. But in the meantime, it's really fun. I think that ChatGPT is about as smart as a book smart person. And, it read a bunch of things, and it's about as accurate as someone who just read a bunch of things and didn't actually ever do it. So I find it to be, there's a little bit of a pinch of salt that I put on everything that it gives me, but it's not bad. It's a lot of fun. And I just made a new Osh soup generated by the one that's on the app there. So, which is better than the last one. And so which was good.
Do you have to pay for ChatGPT? Or
I think I logged in and I think you can use it and it'll give you the free version, but it might take time for it to do it.
Okay.
I pay for it. So I think that
when you log in, it knows. Version 4 or is it using 3.5?
You can switch to version 4.
So it has 3.5
or 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just like using the web interface, but
it's just like using the web interface, except for that it's an app and it just runs a lot smoother. And the web interface was hard because occasionally it was going to ask you to log back in. It's like a weird web page and a little clunky. And this is just, it isn't different, but it doesn't cost anything either. It's just a smoother, better interface for the one that you had before.
It is number one in productivity, which cracks me up.
It's going to make you so productive and then not productive at all.
ChatGPT from OpenAI. It's the official.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I haven't downloaded it yet. Does it let you subscribe to ChatGPT-4 through the app? And is that a way for Apple to benefit from AI?
30%.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I I already had it. I don't know.
Just curious.
Yeah. Not sure.
Very good pick.
Be very aware if it gives you an, quote, wacky image prompt that looks like it might be a Stack Overflow, buffer overflow exploit for something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Maybe
taking it back. Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if I think our title today is going to be Andy's Wild Thumb. I don't know if that will become a good prompt or not, but I'm going to
find out.
I'll let you play with that. And if you are watching the podcast at home or listening to the podcast at home, look at the album art. If it's Andy's Wild Thumb, then you know that Alex succeeded. Thank you, Alex Lindsay. OfficeHours.global is the place to go to see what's going on. Yeah, you're doing all sorts of stuff now. This week is completely different than other weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, like,
what is a subdivision surface? I don't even.
Subdivision surfaces is basically how most things get modeled. So if you see a 3D model, most 3D models on the web or anywhere are getting start off with subdivision surfaces. And so Alan Hawks, who's been an old friend of mine, I've known him for, 15 years or so, and he does really high end, surfacing and modeling and so on and so forth. So he came in and talked about that. Yesterday we had Cindy Drozda on, who does. She does wood turning.
This looks so cool. So like lathes.
She does online wood turning. And, Cindy, she's in our community and she's just so great. But I hadn't seen her in her environment. And you're just like, she's like talking about it a little bit. And then she goes, here, let me show you how I do this. And she's been doing this for 10 years or maybe 8 years or whatever. So suddenly she starts just seamlessly jumping between camera to camera with her keyed over top of it. And showing, and it's a incredible master's course on how to show people what you're teaching,
right?
And for her, it's wood turning, but it could be a lot of other things. But she's so good at it, and it was really, really interesting to see her whole production. She's got like 5 or 6 cameras, and she's got a close up while she shows you the wide, and she's green screen. You can see it here, you can see her working, but you see the close up that's there, and she's got it, and it's all seamless. Like she's got a Stream Deck, and she's got VMix, and it's really intense, and so it was really interesting. And then we had last week we had. Folks on from the NBC team talking about HDR. So nice. They were talking about like how to think about this and so on and so forth. So that was, and we've just had, we're starting to get into this zone where you just have one great, one great second hour after another. So it's a lot of fun.
OfficeHours.global to find out more. And of course, if you want to hire Mr. Lindsay, 090.media, 090.media. Media. Andy Inako, when are you going to be on GBH next?
I am on Friday at noon at the Boston Public Library.
Yay!
So if you're in the Boston area, come on and drop by and watch the show live. Stick around, get yourself a cup of coffee. You're going to have a cookie, which you will have to pay for, both of them. Or you can listen to it live or later at WGBHnews.org.
Here's a man who knows how to pronounce Carl Yastrzemski. That's all I can say.
There you go.
Yes.
Yastrzemski.
He even knows how to spell it. Wow. Jason Snell, he's a Giants fan, but he's also the major domo at sixcolors.com.
Also know how to spell Yastrzemski, right? Because
yes.
We got that in common now, Boston and San Francisco.
He's on the team. His grandson's
on the team. That's right.
That's great. I love that.
Yeah, sixcolors.com. You can read my thing about Final Cut and a little bit about Logic and why I think it's not really suitable for podcast editing right now. And I did a live stream earlier today, so there's like a half hour or you can watch me edit something in Final Cut Pro on the iPad.
Nice.
Where you can see the screen and you can also see my hands on the screen.
Where do you live stream on YouTube or Twitch?
Yeah, YouTube. I've got a Six Colors YouTube channel.
Okay.
Twitch is a little too, I'm not doing it enough to build up a whole Twitch culture and, you got to have like a community and I don't do it enough for that. So it's just YouTube. It's easier on YouTube.
But you got the setup, man. You're doing it. Yeah, that's all.
I got a camera up there, man. Yeah. I can I'm ready
switch.
To go.
I can switch. Thank you, Jason Snell, sixcolors.com. Yep. Thank you, Andy Inako. Thank you, Alex Lindsay. Thanks most of all to you for joining us as you do, I hope, every week. We're here Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. If you are around at that time, you can watch or listen to the live stream at live.twit.tv. There's live video and audio. If you're watching live, chat live in our IRC. That's open to all at IRC. club.twit.tv. But we also have the Discord for Club Twit members. You can chat there if you're a member. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show are available at twit.tv/mbw. That page also has a link to our YouTube channel where you can watch at any time. All of our shows go up there. There's also links to your favorite podcast players. Because the easiest way really to get the show, whether audio or video, is to subscribe. That way it downloads automatically the minute it's available and you can listen at your leisure. Thank you all for being here. But now I have to say, I'm sorry. Put down that ChatGPT because it's time to get back to work. Break time is over. Bye-bye.
Oh, hey, that's a really nice iPhone you have there. You totally picked the right color. Hey, since you do use an iPhone and maybe use an iPad or an Apple Watch or an Apple TV, well, you should check out iOS Today. It's a show that I, Micah Sargent, and my co-host Rosemary Orchard host every Tuesday right here on the Twit Network. It covers all things iOS, tvOS, HomePodOS, WatchOS, iPadOS. It's all the OSs that Apple has on offer. And we love to give you tips and tricks about making the most of those devices, checking out great apps and services, and answering your tech questions. I hope you check it out.